Dude, basically, Dhoni has reached that band in corporate world where he's just now cruising.
He's cruising? He barely shows up to work. Welcome to episode 49 of the Edges and Sledges Cricket Podcast. This is DJ, your host from London, and I'm joined this week by my co-podcasters, Varun in Singapore and Ashwin in Cincinnati. This is our first anniversary episode, actually. Our first ever podcast was released on the 4th of March, 2018. So we've completed a year and a day. We're recording this on the 5th of March, towards the end of my day, and it's the start of Varun's day. So it's been an amazing journey for us, both technically as well as in terms of cricket, in terms of learning about podcasting, learning about how to promote a podcast and to speak to people and picking out topics. We've really enjoyed it, and I hope you guys have enjoyed listening to us. So 49 episodes in, there's lots to talk about this week. I mean, India's playing Australia, New Zealand is playing Bangladesh, Olivier has left South Africa for a coal pack deal, Afghanistan scored the highest T20 score, England's been playing the West Indies in the West Indies in the ODIs. But I think what we're going to start with this week is what's top on everyone's mind, being Indian cricket fans, guys. India versus Australia, the T20s got over. India lost that series. So we're going to talk a little bit first about that. And then we're going to talk about the one-day series that's going on. And we've had two pretty interesting matches. So Varun, let me come to you first about the T20s. Was 2-0 a slightly disappointing result for you? Or was it expected given the experimentation that's been going on?
Yeah, so I mean, I do want to call out that when we predicted it, since we often do on this show and now we go back and be very happy when we predict things, I did say that I think the T20s could go either way. To be honest, I was thinking it would be 1-1, but 2-0 in two games is where it ended up. I think I'm not very disappointed. I think India did take a little bit of a different approach to try and see who they can play. I mean, this was definitely one of our weakest bowling lineups that we played. So let me talk through this a little bit. So the first game, Australia won by 3 wickets. India scored 126 runs for the loss of 7 wickets. Australia chased that in the last over, but they got to 127 for 7. I think the key call out for me in India's batting was really KL Rahul, who was back after a while and hit a pretty cool 50. And of course, we know in T20 cricket, he looks really good. MS Dhoni, again, was not out on 29, but nothing really else to write home about. I think from an Australian bowling perspective, was impressed with the Cummins. I think he's coming up really well off the back of a great test performance to come in the first T20 and do a 4 overs, 19 runs for 1 wicket is really commendable. From an Australian batting perspective, I think Darcy Short finally saw, at an international level, saw some good kind of cricket coming from him after a lot of talk from the old Australian cricketers, especially Warne, etc. So that was good to see. But honestly, it was a one-man show in the first T20 and a one-man show in the second T20. So Glenn Maxwell hit 56 in the first one. And I would say for the second game, single-handedly kind of won them that game. So in the second game, India actually scored 190. Again, KL Rahul did well. Virat Kohli was great, 72. And personally, I think it's fantastic that Virat Kohli in a T20 bats till the end. It gives me a lot of comfort to know that he has the ability to clear the boundary easily in the last few overs. So 190 was what it was. India came out quite well. I think we got Stoinis and Finch very early on. But Maxwell just took the game away from us. 113 of 55 balls. Looked a bit possessed. I think this is what you talk about when it comes to T20 cricket, that one player, one innings can take the entire game away from you. So I wouldn't say that, I mean, I'm not taking anything away from Australia. They played extremely well. They deserve to win. But I think from an Indian bowling perspective, to see Shankar, Kaul, Krunal Pandya as 3 out of your 5 bowlers, I think it's a good move to give them the opportunity, but it was one of our weakest lineup.
Yeah, so the big show really came to the party during the T20s. Ashwin, can I just come to you? Because I know you're an Umesh fan, and he bowled the last over in the first T20, and a lot of people blamed him for the loss, and a lot of people were actually blaming Dhoni for batting slowly as well. So your thoughts on those two aspects? I mean, we put out a poll immediately after we lost that game that what was the cause of the loss, and the options were there was a middle order collapse, the batting of Dhoni was the second option, and the bowling of Umesh was the third option. Funnily enough, we got about 25% both for Umesh and Dhoni. So more percentage-wise than what the batting collapse was, because that was about 44% with some other comments coming in as well. So Ashwin, Umesh's performance and Dhoni's performance in T20 internationals in the first game particularly.
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, first off, to both of you guys, happy anniversary. It's pretty exciting to make it all the way to 1 year. So I think we should be pretty happy celebrating this one. And we're obviously excited to be recording an episode pretty much exactly on our 1 year anniversary. I think we're 1 day late, but that's okay. Look, I think you asked an important question. I want to put on the record first, when you say I'm an Umesh fan, I'm an Umesh fan in test matches. And I've said that before. I think he's in another generation, he may have walked into the Indian fast bowling setup, but just the reality of being behind Bhuvi, Bumrah and Shami, he just doesn't right now. He's been on the sidelines, and of course, Ishant in tests as well. So when you think about it that way, I got to be honest with you, I think the only hope we have when it comes to Umesh in limited overs cricket is when he has the man bun. I was watching, I'm sure we'll talk about it later, I was watching the second episode, I think it was, of Cricket Fever, the new Netflix special, and they showed Umesh bowling to the Mumbai Indians in the second or third game of the 2018 season. And I just remember as soon as the clip started, I looked over to my wife and said, oh my goodness, this is the spell where Umesh took 4 wickets. And this is where we all got excited and the whole correlation between Umesh's man bun and his wicket-taking ability was born. And 2018 was famous for that. But I mean, I digress. Coming back to your specific question about the T20s, I would say on any given day, look, we're a little bit spoiled by Bumrah. I'd say on any given day, with at least one set batsman at the crease, defending 14 in the last over of a T20 is very, very, very difficult. So, yeah, he maybe could have done a better job. I think Bumrah gave 2 runs in the prior over, but we also have to realize they're deliberately not trying to hit Bumrah. They know that they can target the second bowler. So I think I would have loved to see him defend it. It would have been good for him, good for his morale, good for him going into a big IPL season. But I don't really blame him. I think if you had asked most fans, 20th over, Umesh Yadav to bowl 14 runs to defend, I'd say more than 50% would have gone against him. And that's pretty unfortunate, but that's just the reality of his record. I think as to why we lost the match, and you're asking about Dhoni and the rest of the batting performance and stuff, it's tough because honestly, in limited overs cricket, I've been as vocally critical of Dhoni as most. And he's actually had a pretty good last 3 to 6 months, including in the ODIs where he's been helping stabilize a little bit. So I think he batted slowly. He should have found the ability to accelerate, but it's easy to blame the guy who stays around, keeps his wicket and doesn't get too many runs when everybody else went for the big shots and got out. And that doesn't help us either, right? So that's a lot to cover. We can dive deeper after at some point.
Yeah, thanks, Ashwin. I think that's absolutely right. And we will obviously come to Dhoni's performances in ODIs very shortly. But for me, I think the second ODI, the second T20 actually showed the hitting capability of Dhoni again. And he just seems to blow hot and cold. And it's just disappointing for me that he can't produce those performances consistently. I'm a massive Dhoni fan, as you guys obviously know. So which then brings me conveniently to the first ODI. Varun, talk us through what happened in the first ODI. We were chasing a pretty mediocre target, 232. And we were 99 for 4 when two of your favorite batsmen came together. It was, I think, what's that guy's name? King Kedar and Dashing Dhoni. So talk us through that partnership and what your thoughts were while that was going on.
Yeah, and can you be sure to pay emphasis to the fact that you said a new king's in town, right? Kedar is a new king. You said a new king has been crowned or something.
I never said that. I would have never said that. I would have just reacted to what you guys say.
But you also have a Kedar song, right?
I do have a Kedar song on Kedar Parsanam. But I think... I don't know how to kind of look at this, right? Dhoni and Kohli and Shastri are very excited that India was 99 for 4 because it gives opportunities. I don't know what we've been doing for the last 18 months if you have to get excited 3 games before the World Cup to test your middle order. But having said that, I think a couple of things for me before I talk about Dhoni and Yadav. One is, I think I really don't know what's going on with Dhawan because he's getting out first ball, he's smiling. There are amazing memes out there with Dhawan smiling and just saying that this guy is just chill, like... his kids fail an exam, he comes home, he smiles the same way. He gets out on 0 off 1 ball, he comes home, smiles the same way.
But he was smiling with us also, do you remember? When we took a photo with him, he was like, these guys are my best buddies.
Yeah, so he
that
seemed,
smile was like
he seemed
amazing.
Chill. And we know he performs in ICC tournaments, so let's not worry too much about it. But
let's not forget the theory about Dhawan, right? It's the Delhi Daredevils or the Delhi Capitals effect, that as soon as a player finds their way into the Delhi side, their form disappears.
Yeah, it's really scary.
Oh, wait, we're coming to Vijay Shankar, man. We're coming to Vijay Shankar.
Well, Vijay Shankar's form appeared as soon as he left Delhi. So maybe there's a correlation.
It's really scary when you think about it, actually. But over 11 years, there are more than enough examples. But yeah, coming to Dhoni and Jadhav, I think talking about Dhoni, this is where he kind of excels best. And no issues when you're chasing a 240. I think Dhoni can get you there. He will take it down to the last couple of overs. So, yeah, even in this case, I think it went down to 48 overs, 48.2, if I'm not mistaken. So, I think he's a master of crafting an innings like the first ODI. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for that. I think that the challenge comes is when you're chasing a 280, suddenly 59 of 72 balls doesn't seem good enough. But DJ, I know you're a big fan. Actually, I think he needs to play. It's just the batting position. Coming to Kedar, I really don't know what happened to him on that day. He was hitting sixes, he's hit nine fours, 81 of 87. So, yeah, I think Kedar is always just kind of doing what is asked of him. And, yeah, he gave a lot of credit to Dhoni for guiding him. So, I have nothing else to say. I really have nothing else to say about Kedar.
So, talk us through why you hate him so much. Why do you hate Kedar Jadhav so much?
You want to know why? It's because, like, even I know we're jumping the gun a little bit. Yesterday in the second ODI, there was a point where, and we'll talk about this in a couple of minutes, but there was a point where there was one over to be bowled, and they weren't sure who the toss up would be between. Would it be Shankar or Kedar? Right from the 43rd over to the 49th over, you could see Kedar going up to Kohli every over with this confidence that give me the ball, I'll bowl it. And at one point you saw Kohli like just put his two arms up there and like gesture as if, what the hell am I going to give it to you for, man? You just pitched the ball. So it was so basically, I just feel that such mediocrity, there's no place for such mediocrity when all you're openly coming out and saying, yeah, I'm not a bowler and that's the great thing and there's no pressure on me and all I need to do is bounce the ball. I mean, he was delivering a few balls just before the umpire also. Like, I think the umpire was looking to see where is the bowler. So, as it is, you can't see him. You're delivering the ball from behind the bowler. It's just bouncing. The batsmen are laughing when you're bowling. You are laughing when you are bowling. But for your six overs, you are now a permanent fixture in this team. And, okay, fair enough. Like, yesterday, I have to admit, you had Jaddu, Kullu, I think Bumrah, and Shami, and your best economy rate was Kedar. So, I just, maybe Kedar is that, you know, like that guy or girl who you can't understand and you just want to find out more. So, I think maybe that's what it is.
Hold on. You were talking about yesterday. If I can jump in really quickly. In his entire ODI bowling career, his economy rate is 4.9. Okay. Shami, who is a strike bowler, his economy rate is 5.47. So almost a half a run and over more. Jadeja, who's a lead bowler in the side mostly for his bowling, is 4.88. So pretty much exactly the same. Kuldeep Yadav is 4.7. So right in the same range. So it's not a one day. It's not a one hit wonder.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. I think Kedar should open the bowling for India, open the batting for India. He should be fielding at point for India.
Well, since you mentioned batting, since you mentioned batting, his average is 45.6. He strikes it over 100. No, he's got two centuries
and 550s. I don't want to hear any of the stats. This is a pure emotion feeling thing. And yeah, if my question to both of you is, if he's so damn good, then just play him as the fifth bowler.
Well, he may have, for all we know, he would have won us the match in that last over. You just can't know because you didn't give him a chance.
I think people have gone crazy, just to be very honest. Yesterday, I had a friend tell me that Kedar has won as the same number of matches for India as Sachin has won. Okay, so I don't know if people are just targeting me and they're just getting a kick out of this, but it makes my blood boil. And seriously, somebody yesterday told me Kedar and Sachin have won the same number of matches for India.
Dude, I mean, but it's your unreasoning hate for the man. You don't see the stats. You don't see what he's done. I mean, his bowling economy rate is fantastic. And his batting average is, 45 when he bats low down the order. I mean, what else can you want from a guy, man?
Then play him as your number seven. That is it.
Arey, but he, see, the point is this. He's there for if Pandya is bowling well, you can't trust Pandya or Vijay Shankar with 10 overs. That is the problem.
So this is what it all comes
You can't trust him. He's a backup.
So this is what my whole problem has been with Indian cricket. You have a backup. Bloody Pandya is a backup for who? I don't know. Kedar is a backup for Pandya.
Arre to then where is the Kapil Dev, bhai? Where do you have a perfect all-rounder? You don't have Ben Stokes. You don't have Kapil Dev. You don't have... I mean, he's basically a Yuvraj Singh, boss. In his conditions, okay. He can bowl 10 overs. And some days he won't bowl anything.
You are comparing Kedar to Yuvraj Singh now. Yesterday, somebody compared him to Sachin.
Junior, I don't know what the stats are, but I'm pretty sure his batting average and his strike rate will both be higher than Yuvraj.
I don't have the stats. I just want to end this rather heated conversation by saying one thing. Is that Jadhav used to play for Delhi Daredevils and he left in 2014, which is right about the time he made the Indian side and is now pretty much a mainstay in the Indian side. So I think my theory still stands.
Fair enough. So Ashwin, do you have any players you hate for absolutely no reason? Apart from an emotional reaction to their being?
Absolutely not. I hate one fast bowler and one fast bowler alone and there's no emotion. It's just pure stats and facts.
Oh, that's Shardul, right? Okay, agreed. Fair enough.
I'd rather say not mention his name, so thanks.
Fair enough. Shardul Thakur. Classy. Anyway, so coming to the second ODI, we've only just talked about the first ODI. Ashwin, did you follow the second ODI at all? It's a pretty good game of cricket, man.
Yeah, I did. I managed, fortunately, to watch a little bit at home. Unfortunately, the rest of it is during my work day, but I did get a chance to follow it and watch some highlights. But so... just to quickly recap for folks, 250. India batted first, made 250. Rohit Sharma this time made a first over duck. So interestingly, in each match so far, one of the openers has made zero. Then 248 of the runs were scored while Kohli was at the crease. He hit a magnificent century, 116 in 120 balls on a pretty tough track to bat on. He's brought up his 40th ODI century, so unbelievable feat. Like, I mean, he's second to Sachin, but whoever's third is a long, long way away, and he's played barely half the number of matches Sachin did. So just outstanding. But, you know, we've spent lots of time talking about Kohli on this show. India managed to end up with 250, so a little bit of a mini collapse at the end. And then Australia, at one point, looked to be cruising. For the first time, the openers put on a pretty good partnership. I think they made about 83, but then they both fell back-to-back. I think one of them fell to Kedar, actually. So also pretty exciting. Usman Khawaja fell to Kedar.
Caught and cover.
Exactly.
Khawaja.
And then, you know, slowly the innings started to proceed. To be honest, when Stoinis and we managed to get Maxwell out pretty quickly. To be honest, when Stoinis and Hanscom were batting, and then when Hanscom got out and Carey came, and it still looked like it was Australia's game. And then some absolutely outstanding bowling in the last five overs helped turn it around, including a penultimate over by Bumrah, where I think he gave two runs. And then, you know, Varun mentioned this, some strange planning by Kohli, and in the end it worked out well, but left the 50th over for a part-timer. And so they were on the field trying to figure out, should we bring on Kedar? Should we bring on Shankar? I think conventional wisdom prevailed. And despite having only bowled one over before that, Shankar got the 50th over, picked up two wickets and three balls and finished the game off. Got Stoinis LBW and then got whoever the last person was bowled. So really, really strong finish. I think, you know, somebody was saying India's bowlers seem to be in positions where they, you know, there's 120, 130 to win in 20 overs, and they still back themselves. And many, many times this has happened where India used to be the side who's batting bailed them out, and now it's become the side who's bowling bails us out. So I thought a really good finish, lots of good positives. Obviously, great to see Kohli do well. Nice to see Kuldeep pick up three wickets, and generally the bowlers do well. But then also for Shankar, who had a, you know, and actually, sorry, I should have mentioned this earlier too, but Shankar made 46 and he was looking really, really good before he got run out in the most unfortunate and most painful ways, which is a straight drive back that just touched the bowler's fingertips and got him run out, backing up a little bit too far. So that was disappointing. I think Shankar was looking amazing as a batsman, as a pure batsman. He started slow, consolidated with Kohli, picked up the rate near the end and then got run out early. So lots of positives to take away. I think before I wrap up, the one thing I wanted to say that's interesting for me is in a year of a World Cup where we expect, you know, roads of pitches in England, which are going to be 300, 350, 370 plus scores. I think it's very interesting that in both Hyderabad and Nagpur, the surfaces have been a little bit tricky. Both matches have been low scoring. So I'm not quite sure what to think about that, both from a prep standpoint by the BCCI and from the perspective of you know, the players, are they ready to go off and play these 350 plus matches in England if we're playing these mid 200 low scorers against Australia? So that's that.
And sorry, Ashwin, yeah, I just want to add on. I think for me in the World Cup, again, DJ, I don't know what you think, but I think they're going to create the pitches that suit England, which are the 350 kind of pitches. And I think that's where India will struggle, because we seem to have gotten our groove in this 250 to 270 range, both first innings and second innings. But beyond that, it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah, so the pitches are going to be an interesting question, given how England has been performing in the West Indies, right, of late. I mean, they nearly had the West Indies chased down 417, where the West Indies at one stage needed 35 from 22 balls with four wickets still left. And I was just like, this is insane. They're about to chase these runs down. And then in the very next game, after they set 417 for the West Indies, England were bowled out for like 113 or 118 or something. So, I mean, England seemed to be wildly yo-yoing between being sublime and ridiculous. But I think they will go with the view that let's put out some belters, try and get close to 400 and watch the other team crumble under the pressure. Because I think no one has scored more 400 more times than England since the last World Cup. And that's a very telling stat. What I found, and Ashwin, I think you're right. You pointed out a very important point that we are playing games where they're very low scoring pitches and we're kind of able to pace our chases. They don't have to go hell for leather from ball one. And for me, maybe that is the idea behind that, is to actually test the middle order and to see whether it can put together some big runs, like we saw Kedar put together that innings of 80. Obviously, today we didn't really see anybody apart from Vijay Shankar and Kohli score a few runs. And maybe the idea behind the preparation of the pitches is to say, okay, you are going to get some time in the middle order, because the pitches are going to be tricky. The openers aren't just going to sit there and score all the runs for you. And the openers seem to be playing musical chairs on who's going to get out for zero. So that is maybe the only rationale I can think of for bringing out these pitches, which are assisting the bowlers. And we are seeing the Indian middle order exposed more than we usually see them being exposed to the opposition.
Is hell for leather an expression, or did you just come up with that on your own?
No, it's an expression. Definitely.
Oh, shit. I never heard it before.
Yeah, I was just going to ask the same thing. I was like, what a lie.
No, it's not. It's definitely an expression. But I was just going to mention, actually, for me, the interesting part in the game today or yesterday for you, Varun, was when Kuldeep went for 15 runs of that over, when who was it who was smashing him? It wasn't Hanscom. Stoinis was just whacking him, and then Carey was sweeping him, and it was all like the game was almost done. They were 200 for five. And for us to fight back from there is actually reflective of two things: the weakness in the Australian lower order and the strength of the Indian bowling lineup. I mean, Bumrah is just brilliant. And one of the things I was going to actually point out, Ashwin, was one of the reasons we thought and people thought that Umesh had done very badly in the T20 game, in the first T20 game, was because Bumrah had literally bowled and over which most bowlers can just dream of bowling. The 19th over for two runs and two wickets. I mean, it's really hard to follow up that act, right? So I feel a bit bad for Umesh on that. So anyway, guys, I think that kind of wraps up the first two ODIs. India lead 2-0 going into the third ODI, which will take place on Friday. There's been some interesting cricket low-scoring games, so we'll see how that series develops. Just moving on to the England versus West Indies, or the West Indies versus England ODIs that we briefly mentioned. That series finished 2-2. I think the last time, in our last episode, we mentioned the first game where the West Indies scored 360 and England just casually chased that down. The next game, England were again looking good to win the game, chasing around 280, and they just collapsed for next to nothing and lost by 26 runs. The game after that was washed out, so it was 1-1. Then England put together that massive 417 off the back of Joss Butler and Owen Morgan hundreds. Guys, should we talk a little bit about that game? The innings by Joss Butler and then the follow-up innings by Chris Gayle. Ashwin, thoughts on that? Because it's one in your time zone, right?
Yeah, I mean, fortunately, that was one I was following a lot. I was listening to the wonderful people over at Guerrilla Cricket as they were commentating that. And it was just unbelievable. And I think it's interesting because I was thinking about this myself. In the game where they made 364, or 360, I think West Indies made and England chased it down, we were all kind of saying we were a little bit bored by it. I mean, just six after six, it took away the fun for it. And we had that conversation, if not last week, a couple of weeks ago. And this game somehow, I think if you go far enough, maybe with the six sitting and the strike rate, then it becomes exciting again. Maybe it's a curve and we crossed a certain point. And 418 was just outstanding. Morgan, I think, hit 103 of 88. But Joss Butler, who I blame the Rajasthan Royals for making him the formidable player he is now, made 150 of 77. I think he hit as many sixes as he did fours. It was 12 sixes and 12 fours or something like that. They made 418, made it look pretty easy. And then, you basically thought the game was over at this point. And Gale comes out and smashes just from ball one, smashes 162 of 97. He unfortunately perished sometime around, I think, the 33rd, 34th over. And that left, a still pretty formidable batting lineup with Brathwaite, Jason Holder, and then Ashley Nurse, who frankly I didn't know could bat. And came on, they got within 30 runs of the target, but then with two overs left, they got bowled out for 389. But an unbelievable chase. And that's what I say, I find it hypocritical of myself that I thought this was an exciting match, even though the 361 wasn't. But I think this got so close to that 434, and then West Indies almost actually chasing it down. It just got really exciting. So I enjoyed following that game. I hope to see Gale keep up his form, because West Indies wouldn't have been in my consideration set for one of the contenders for this World Cup, and now they certainly are.
Yeah, awesome. And the next game being such a contrast was even more amusing. So, Varun, your thoughts on Gale's return to form, and is this going to affect Punjab's chances in the IPL?
No, I think so. Gale's return to form is quite incredible. I don't know. I think he's 38 or 39 years old. He's going to retire soon. And he's just come out and hit like 400 of four games, out of which one was a not out. And the last game, he just kind of put his statement there that the universal boss is back. So Punjab's chances, I don't know. I think Rahul and Gale both opening will be great to watch again. I don't know if they have the depth to go far in the IPL. But from a World Cup perspective, I am excited about West Indies. Like Ashwin said, didn't think they were in this consideration set. But you've got Gale, you've got Hope, Bravo, Hetmyer, Brathwaite, all kind of, if they come good, we know West Indies can be a great limited oversight. So from a World Cup perspective, very excited that West Indies has done well.
Amazing. And there's been a few other interesting developments in the last week or so. So I'm just going to go through each one of them very, very quickly. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on those. Rahane had an interview in which he said he deserved more chances consistently. And so he seems to be slightly disappointed about being left out of India's ODI side. Ashwin, very quickly, has he got a shot of being in the squad, especially with KL's return to form?
Yeah, I'm not sure if KL is a barrier, but I do not think he has a shot, unfortunately. As much as I like Rahane, I think he got a fair number of chances in the ODI setup and didn't quite latch onto them like some of the other players have. And so I think if he was genuinely the consideration, he would have been at least flying with the team for the last few series. After this Australia series, we go to the IPL, and then I think there's one more. There's the World Cup right after, right? I think maybe there's, I don't remember, maybe there's a couple more games somewhere. And so I think if they were going to have him in the real World Cup setup for the 15, let alone the 11, he would have played by now. So I think he's a deserving player, maybe just a little bit of wrong place, wrong time. I think had he latched onto his opportunities, he could have cemented that number four slot where we need somebody who can consolidate and anchor the innings along with Dhoni at five, but he just didn't latch onto his chances, and I think it's going to go somewhere else, most likely to Raidu.
I just want to add, I think Rahane can be a little bit delusional at times. Like, there have been two articles in the last 2 years that I've read. I think the first one was in December where he actually said, yeah, I think at MCG I'm going to score a 200. So a little bit delusional there, but the more fun one was that I think he told a reporter that when my biopic is made, I want Aamir Khan to play me. So I think that's a bit extreme, man.
Easy answer. They're the same height, right? Don't you remember meeting him? Weren't you surprised by how short he is?
Yeah, I was surprised by how short he is.
He is short, right? That's why I keep telling you his bat is too big for him. And my KL Rahul theory is also proved correct. The moment he goes into short sleeves, he starts smashing it.
Yeah.
So he needs to just get rid of those long sleeves and learn how to bat in short sleeves, even if it's freezing. He needs to just bat in short sleeves. A hat tip to Achal for sending that through on Twitter. He was actually the one who brought our attention to the Rahane article. The other thing I wanted to talk to you very quickly, guys, about, Ashwin, I sent around a link about Mitch Marsh getting hit in the unmentionables. And that was, what did you guys think of that? I mean, apparently he nearly cracked one of his testicles or something. It was insane. I mean, through being hit by a cricket ball, and he went to hospital and they had to operate on him and stuff. I mean, this seems to be quite a dangerous game. I mean, Ashwin? Varun, guys?
Yeah, I mean, it is a dangerous game. I think it's one of those weird oddities about the world of cricket, or any sport maybe, that if somebody gets hit on the knee or the ankle or the arm or anywhere, people are, you know, rushing to their aid, trying to make sure they get taken well care of. And somehow, just because of the immaturity of the human race in general, when you get hit in the groin, people still find it funny. I mean, I think it's unfortunate because in this case, I mean, you know it's true, right? Like, even the commentators are joking and laughing about it. In this case, I think it was a little bit extreme. I think he had a ruptured testicle, which is really, really unfortunate. I think, I mean, again, not to be insensitive, but what made it funny is because it was during throwdowns. So it wasn't even like somebody was charging in from...
Exactly. That's what I was just going to come to say. He got hit while taking throwdowns. How? I mean, what is he doing?
Yeah, it was pretty unfortunate.
Why is he so bad? Varun, your two bits?
No, I'm just saying it...
Any thoughts?
No thoughts, but I think his last comment in the article you sent was that they're still both working, hopefully, so it's good.
I just want to say, I don't think Varun noticed it, but I appreciated you asking for his two bits. Well played,
DJ. Yeah. I did. So I guess only time will tell whether everything's still in working order, right? So that was that. The other piece of news that broke this week was the Colpack deal for Olivia, the South African bowler who our friends at Gorilla Cricket SA like to call Wilfie, which I find quite amusing, coming straight after the Marsh Tutte shot situation. He has signed a 3-year Colpack deal to play county cricket in England. So in the prime of his career, where he seems to be making good headway with the South African test team, he's going to stop playing for his country and play for county, which, I mean... I think it's disappointing for the South African players and fans, but I mean, you can't really blame players because South Africa has its own issues in terms of selection. They've got a quota system, and for that, and Olivier obviously has that to consider. He also is behind Steyn, Philander, for the moment, Rabada at the moment, so he may not be the first choice seamer for that matter. So that's happened. And finally, the Mumbai Indians documentary was released on Netflix, guys. So I've watched about 6 episodes of that. Ashwin, I know you've started watching it. But guys, I would suggest the first episode is a must watch. There's some really great stories, by the way, in the rest of the episodes. But the first episode is just so great because you see Akash Ambani literally bang into a wall while speaking to the cameras, which is... I mean, that moment is just one of pure, unadulterated joy. So I think if you start watching for that and watch it for the cricket, no one's going to blame you. But it's really interesting. It's a behind-the-scenes documentary, incredible access to the players, some incredible stories, especially Bumrah's story. I mean, I think the story about the shoes, I had a lump in my throat after that. And I was on a 3-hour flight. So it was an interesting situation. So guys, cricket fever. Varun, you haven't started watching it, have you?
No, I'm going to start today. I just finished watching 9 seasons rerun of The Office, so now I can move on.
Amazing. But it's just so good because it was last season, right? It's made about the 2018 IPL. So as Ashwin said in the beginning of the episode, I mean, the Umesh spell is still fresh in your mind. But even then, you're like all pumped and you're like, what's going to happen now and stuff? Because it's been made pretty well, I think. Ashwin, you watched a couple of episodes, right?
I think I'm at 4 now. So it's a fantastic show. Really enjoyed it. Highly recommend. More than anything, I think you summarized it well, but more than anything for me, it's 18 days from the first match of the IPL and just getting me fired up. I mean, we wait for this all year. It's something we've been talking about, but just watching some amazing high definition quality backroom footage, you know, lots of interesting insights, which maybe we can talk more next week. But I find it fascinating that Mahela is such a powerful, outspoken figure in the dressing room, after games, before games. And Rohit doesn't seem to be as strong or powerful a leader as I thought or expected. So anyway, go watch it. I don't want to ruin it for people, but just gets you fired up for the IPL, and we're all already excited and counting down the 18 days.
I think for me, actually, what I really enjoyed was, you know, we all like just sitting and watching it at home. We're like, oh, whatever, it's going to go on for 2 months and let's play fantasy cricket. But I mean, every game these players play, it makes a difference to them. And someone like Pollard, I think my perception of him has completely changed after watching this documentary. Because remember last season, he was actually dropped. And they go into quite a lot of detail around that towards the back end of the documentary. So, I mean, my perception of that guy has completely changed because of the documentary. So, I think it's just incredible. And I just hope that they do like one documentary for each of the IPL teams so that fans of each team have like the opportunity to go behind the scenes and see what's actually going on for their teams. I think it would just be incredible.
I was joking last night with Gauravi, my wife, when we were watching this. She's a Mumbai Indians fan. And I said, it must be really nice having a team that's good enough to be worthy of having a documentary made about them. I don't know what that feels like, unfortunately.
Oh, are they rich enough to have a documentary made about them? That is the question.
Yeah, maybe that's what it is. Let's assume that's what it is. Not that Delhi's come bottom two for 10 years.
No, we made the semis. We made the playoffs in 2011, right? Varun, do you remember that? When Yusuf took us out?
Yeah, that's when I had a hashtag believe.
Hashtag believe was trending in NW8. Anyway, guys, that's all the discussion topics that we had. There's been lots of cricket, so we've tried to cover as much of it as we can. The last segment for the week is actually the listener quiz segment. And last week we asked a question and we got some answers in. So over to you, Ashwin.
So the question that we asked this week was an interesting one. DJ came up with it. And it was, what is the slowest T20I innings played by an Indian batsman? So, you know, international T20s only. And what was the slowest T20 innings by an Indian batsman? And we got some really interesting responses. I think we got one correct answer from Arindam, who messaged us. We got, let's keep going. I think lots of people guessed Dhoni. So that was not the right answer. We had Kapil MSD4 give us the right answer. We had Mitran give us the right answer. That was after a little bit of guessing. Also, we had Visit Piyush give us the right answer.
And Taz as well, actually. Taz actually gave us the right answer as well, including the ground and everything.
There you go. So just for everybody else, the correct answer is Ravindra Jadeja at Lords in 2009. He played the slowest T20I innings on record by an Indian batsman. And it's a record I hope stays for a while because we don't want to see anybody beat that record.
Yeah, it was 25 of 35, right? When basically, there were all those signs in Lord saying, why aren't you not singing anymore? Because Yuvraj Singh had got out and stuff.
And that still gives me nightmares when I think about that innings.
It's pretty depressing. I remember watching it on TV. Luckily, I hadn't got a ticket to Lord's. So I was pretty happy that I didn't get that ticket. So anyway, guys, so that's the show for the week. Thank you very much for joining us. It's been a year since we've been doing this. And I mean, it's flown by. It's been incredible. And really enjoyed speaking to all of you guys on Twitter. We've enjoyed all the emails you guys send us. And thank you so much for that. Our email, obviously, is always open for you guys to write into. It's contact@onetiponehand.com. We're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram @onetiponehand. The number, the figure, one tip, the figure, one hand. So drop us a line there. Come and say hi. Rate us on iTunes. We're now on Spotify, which is also in India. So guys, you can go and find us on Spotify. We're on all the major platforms. So subscribe to us so you get notified of new episodes. Tell people about us. We'd love to grow. We'd love to hear from you. And please, please, please keep joining us every week. We love doing it. And we hope you guys enjoy listening to it as well. So signing off for this week and episode 49, it's DJ from London and my podcasters.